or ongoing reliability testing, is, as I described at the end of the last lesson, typically done to evaluate the long-term robustness or life or reliability of a product. And a couple of examples come to mind, but I was reminded as I was thinking through the material here of a discussion I had with a test engineer, Rosa, some years ago. And she was a test engineer, so she worked with products in manufacturing, in like electronics would be the bed of nails test or the functional test, or and she had various other roles of evaluating the functionality of a product as it finished its production process. And I was mentioning that we were setting up an ongoing reliability test. And there was a significant amount of confusion in her mind as to why the functional tests at the end of the production line were not sufficient. They had 90-95% coverage. They evaluated all the important parameters. And why would I want to take some samples and destroy them, essentially? Well, some things change over time. So if I add temperature, or use a stress of temperature or vibration, I can age a product, and done correctly, can age it significantly, and then evaluate, go back through those same tests that Rosa would typically do, and evaluate its performance again. So is performance, does it still meet the requirements, or is it changed enough to be considered a failure, or did it fail outright and just doesn't power up anymore? So some things are at risk early on. Its performance and functionality is a mix of the design requirements and its assembly process and all of the associated variability. But there's no getting around the fact that just because it's working at the end of the production line doesn't necessarily it's going to mean it's going to work when it reaches the customer or work for 20 years in the customer's hands. So ongoing reliability test is one of those ways for us to evaluate the impact of the variability of the supply chain and manufacturing process on the performance of its reliability performance. Let's get into a little bit more detail. The basic notion is that we should focus on the failure mechanisms. The process of from concept up until we go to production is a process of collecting and understanding the various risks to its reliability performance. Now, variations in suppliers' quality of their product being produced is one risk, but so are a dozen or hundreds of other things that could be potentially lead to product failures or limiting the life of the product. If we're doing halt testing, the areas that we don't have sufficient margin or we're not at the technical limit, the technology limit, we may have very minimal margin in some areas, even with the best available technology. In other times, the basic notion, though, is that whenever we're doing testing, and especially with ongoing reliability testing, we want to get an answer fairly quickly. So evaluating a single failure mechanism is usually much more efficient and can achieve much higher acceleration factors than evaluating the entire product. The basic notion, though, is that we're looking for those changes in supply chain or component or subsystem variability that would lead to failure. And so it's combining the notion of the variability of creating products, but more specifically looking at failure mechanisms that are manifest from that variability. So we could be doing a sequential test in order to do on system or ongoing reliability test. But we still need to think about what are the appropriate stresses and what's the test that we would use in a sequential fashion. So as we're adding units from, say, a random sample of our production process, we take some subset number of units for testing. But we want to be able to guard against a particular amount of our production. If we only do the test once a quarter and we've made 3 million units, well, then if we find an issue, how many of those 3 million are at risk? And on the other hand, if we evaluate a product and can do it quickly, such that it's just the last hour's production that we're uncertain about, then it limits the scope of the potential problems that are shipped to the field. So there's a bunch of different variations, and it depends on your manufacturing process, which is the appropriate testing sequence, the number of samples, what, and all of the various risks in sample size and test evaluations and so on that you're willing to take. But you could use SBRT, or you could use control charts, or you could use a number of different techniques. But the idea is that I'm going to evaluate a sample and make a judgment about a batch or a sequence of products that we're producing based on whether they're going to be reliable enough or not. So that one of the benefits is that it extends the process control in whether we're using SPC or some other technique. It allows us to evaluate those things that are oftentimes difficult to evaluate on a product that is still shippable. So in many cases, ongoing reliability is a destructive test because of the aging that we're going to do. But it also may provide an early warning of latent defects or changes that are hidden from other processes. One of the issues that we've run into in the past is crack capacitors. These small ceramic capacitors are very susceptible to cracking if not handled well, or if they receive too much thermal shock or too much bending stress. They are essentially a piece of glass after all. But if they crack, they usually crack such that it doesn't create a dead short, but it creates an open. In doing functional tests or electrical tests, most capacitors look like an open in the circuit anyway. So they're very hard to detect electrically. And the product may well perform as expected for some period of time. Over time, though, usually these cracks will propagate and cause either a short or a rapid increase in current draw, which essentially is a short, and cause the capacitor to explode off of the board, or goes cold. It does create a significant open, or a complete open, in the circuit. And then we lose the value of that component completely. And that may or may not cause the product to fail, but the wrong capacitor may help, it may disrupt the performance of a particular part of your circuit. And so it can lead to failure. Now, a cracked capacitor can happen during manufacturing, and it can pass all of the tests, functional tests, and it can work for the customer for a couple of months. But then through thermal cycling, that crack will propagate and complete its path to failure. Now, even if that product, those cracks could be in, say, 10% of your products, which is a significant failure rate for some product lines. So we used to run, while I was at Hewlett-Packard, an ongoing reliability test, and that it detected this crack capacitor about 3 weeks before the first ones in the field were expected to see the same or similar failure. So it gave the program a bit of time to prepare a response and to, one, mitigate the problem in the manufacturing process and stop more units from being produced that had this defect, but also allowed the team to prepare for product failures as they occurred. And there's many other examples where the ongoing reliability test is allowed us to find and detect and to minimize the impact of those adverse changes in our supply chain or in manufacturing process. So between the various tests in the last lesson and process control and ongoing reliability test, each one takes that thinking through, what are the failure mechanisms that I want to monitor? What are the sources that lead to sources of error or variability that lead to that failure? And ideally, can we control it there? Can we monitor this as far upstream as possible and maintain process control? If not, then one of the options is to do some testing at the end of the manufacturing line or on a subset of samples that we do a destructive test on, an ongoing reliability test. So you may have been thinking that this is similar to burn-in. There's a fundamental difference with that, and we'll talk about that in the upcoming lessons. But if you're using burn-in, I'm not going to bite my tongue. I'm going to ask, why? Why are you doing burn-in testing? And what's the advantage that that's providing you? So in the next section, we'll talk about stress screening, which includes doing burn-in testing.